It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielso Lake puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Carey on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back. It is KSL's Unrivaled, another edition of KSL's Unrivaled. We're back on a Thursday. Couldn't be happier. My Seahawks up on the TV screen. A little sad because he just gave up a touchdown, but it's 7-7 right now in that first quarter in that NFL matchup. Scott Mitchell, of course, on the other side of everything here, as he always is. Scott, thanks for being with me this evening, buddy.
You're welcome. Always good to be here, Alex.
We're going
to
kick off the show as we always do. It's a 7:05 cut and top billing again this week. Bill Riley, the voice of the Utes, right here with us at 7:05.
The cut at 7:05. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Brought to you by Wasatch Medical Clinic. Bill Riley, as you join us here, the last 2 weeks we've had you on, it's been a Friday of bad news early afternoon. And I think that this week feels so much different. There was always like a teetering on the edge the last couple of weeks. This one feels like it's something that we're getting a little bit closer. Unless USC's got problems, Utah's in a good spot right now, are they not?
I feel like I'm Phil Connors waking up in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Every single time I come on with you, needle-nose Ned Ryerson, I feel like I'm going to wake up today and tomorrow, and it's going to be different. And maybe, just maybe, Andy McDowell and not Scott Mitchell
will join
me in the booth on Saturday night.
What's wrong with me?
Well, look, hey, nothing, but Andy McDowell is Andy McDowell.
You know Andy McDowell, that's what's wrong with you.
That's true, and I don't want to be Andy McDowell either. But what I do, what do you think? I mean, we've had all these expectations. We've had all these pregame, you know, predictions about everything with like Arizona and then UCLA, and it didn't happen. It's almost like, what do you expect from this game where Utah hasn't played a game yet this year and they're playing USC in their opener?
I expect a lot of energy. I expect a lot of enthusiasm, and I expect some sloppy play because it's the first game. I think the offense will be ahead of the defense, but I think you're going to see pretty good energy. I mean, these guys have had to wait for so long, and they've had to sit the last two weekends and watch USC and Oregon and Cal and ASU, everybody play. So I think the energy and the enthusiasm will be good. I think the play will probably be a little sloppy just because it's a first game and you're getting up to game speed, maybe for a little while. But I think it'll be a good game. I really do. I think especially both offenses will be pretty well dialed in.
There's been such talk about how thin they were last week in terms of numbers. How close they were obviously was made evident when they had one positive test on Friday, and then that was below the threshold. So now when they're filling in, I think, a little bit more, the thought is that they're not as close as they were last week, and that they could be almost to, quote-unquote, you know, kind of a full roster, at least of guys who are mostly starters. So how do you prep then after having prepped for these other teams? How do you sit down and go, okay, because you were supposed to have two games to get ready for the toughest team in the Pac-12 South Division, and now you're coming in and it's game one against these guys.
You just do it. I mean, you just approach it like another game week. I mean, you don't have those two games to knock the rust off before you face the Trojans. But the good news is, as you said, Alex, and I can confirm this because I've talked to coaches and the AD today, they're back to nearly 100% of their starters. There's still a few guys that are dealing with a few things, but it's not like it was a week or two ago where we were talking about scout team and, right, you know, walk-ons and things like that. They're back to having nearly a full complement of everybody they need. So, but they're, you know, it's USC, man. You just buckle up the chin strap and you say, okay, this is our first game and we're going to do what we can here. But that's just the cards you've been dealt. It's 2020. Do what you got to do.
What is a realistic expectation with the season? I mean, losing those first two games, and right now, I mean, the most games Utah can play is five under the, you know, whatever schedule they have right now. Is there a possibility of making up any of those games down the road, or does the expectation change now just because you're only going to play five games?
Well, I mean, they're still eligible for the Pac-12 title, Scott. I mean, if they go 4-0 over the next four games, they'll play in the Pac-12 championship game. I mean, that's what the goal was, I think, when they began training a month or two ago, was to win the Pac-12 South for a third straight time and get to a Pac-12 championship game. So if they beat SC, ASU, Colorado, and Oregon State, or whichever teams they happen to play, and they go 4-0, I think the goal is still, as long as that remains an option, I think the goal's out there to win the Pac-12 South. I guess we'll find out or get an idea on Saturday night how realistic
that
seem
is. Just strange,
I mean, we don't
though.
Know right now.
It just seems so strange to me. It just seems strange to me. It's like, yeah, the four, you know, they won four games. I don't know. It's almost like now you can have your Pac-12 championship this year.
Scott, it's 2020.
It just seems so strange.
Yeah. So, Bills.
You mean if they're going to play for it, Scott, you'd rather just let somebody else win it and not try and compete for it?
I would just complain, and I would say it was strange, but I'd still go.
He'd still show up, yeah.
Yeah.
So, my question
is – it still counts.
My question is, with the president's deciding that they would adjust the – possibility of non-conference schedule games to go in and fill in the place of games that might be canceled from week to week. One, how does the Pac-12 handle that? Because they've been the most rigorous when it comes to the testing side of things. And two, what does that mean? Like, are they looking for adding as many games as they can to get into the college football playoff, or is this just trying to stay in that conversation week after week and having as many games as a Pac-12 conference as possible?
I think it's just about letting teams play games, Alex. I mean, the playoff's going to happen if somebody goes – I mean, I still think it's a remote possibility, but if somebody goes undefeated and has a good record, I think that's a possibility. But I think allowing the possibility of a non-conference game – and you guys saw the release. I mean, the thresholds to get there, I mean, those are three pretty big hurdles.
Yeah.
I mean, not only does the team you're playing have to do the testing thresholds – And then you've got to be able to get all the logistics stood up, and then you've got to hope that another Pac-12 game isn't canceled
right. That
same week, because you could do all the work to set up the non-conference game, and then if another conference game comes open, the non-conference opponent goes to the wayside, and you'll play the conference game instead. So I think they're just trying to give teams options if it does. Like, you know, Colorado, had this rule been in place last week, Colorado would have had, you know, 4 or 5 days to try and line up an opponent. But they just put it in place now because they knew last weekend ASU wasn't going to be able to play. So, you know, they would have had a little bit of time. And so I think if say, tomorrow, somebody in the Pac-12 has a big outbreak and it's going to impact them not only this weekend but the following weekend, whoever that next opponent is could be, you know, could work on lining up a game.
Did you have boards made, like you're like make for making calls during the game in the last 2 weeks? And did you just end up burning them in effigy or something?
I do about 8 to 10 hours of game prep every week. And, that's 16 to 20 hours I will not be getting back. But I do know UCLA and Arizona.
Very well.
Inside now. So, yeah, but I got my spot. The spotting boards were easy. I didn't have to change them for Utah. So that part of it's
That's good, yeah.
I just had to update the other team, so.
Well, we're excited for you guys. And I'm not trying to jinx you, because I want so bad for Scott to do something on the weekends. My heaven, we got to get this guy doing something on the weekends. He calls me up. He's like, game canceled. I'm leaving. I don't care. I'm leaving the state. I'm driving away. I'm going fishing somewhere. Don't call me. So I just want Scott to do something with his life on the weekends. That's really what I want to see this
game. That's really kind of you, Alex. Thank you so much.
So Bill Riley and Scott Mitchell are going to have the call. USC and Utah. See, I was trying not to bring up the BYU question because I don't even want to flirt with that idea because I don't think it's going to happen. But We'll see how that works out. Bill Riley, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Taking the break. We'll come back. I want to chop this up a little bit because with the possibility of those games being played in the Pac-12, how is that going to work? And BYU fans, do not get your hopes up. This is a very, very small chance of that happening, of BYU playing Utah. So we'll be right back. More to go right here on KSL's Unraveled on KSL News Radio.
Welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. I'm Scott Mitchell with a gravelly voice, and that's Alex Curie over there. You know, it's funny to watch these players when they come off the field in a football game and they've just scored a touchdown.
Yeah.
And it's this kind of awkward situation where it's like like the coach is all excited and he wants to be, you know, like they normally are, you know,
right.
You know, giving them high fives.
You're referring to the Seahawks just scoring right before we went
exactly.
to the break.
Exactly. And it's like the player's like, don't touch me. Don't touch me. Don't get there. It's like, I know it's all good, but you know, don't touch me.
Please don't touch me.
Yeah.
Well, Tyler Lockett, maybe he has an aversion to being touched by other human beings.
Well, I don't think normally they do, you know, but.
Why would it be awkward to celebrate with your teammates? Come on.
Well, because you don't want to get COVID.
Oh, okay.
Keep yourself 6 feet apart.
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying. And you don't want to look like you're. You don't want to look like you get too close. Yeah, but Tyler Lockett caught a touchdown pass from Russell Wilson. That's his second of the night for Wilson. Threw his first one to DK Metcalf. They missed the extra point though, which I cannot stand. I love that it's a more difficult play nowadays. That it's not easy to just. It's not a gimme anymore. Because of situations like this, the Seahawks are up 13-7 now after missing that one. And, yeah, so there you go. That's the update from Seattle. They're wearing the worst jerseys they could wear with their bright.
Those are Orlando Thunder jerseys.
I know. Right, that's the bright green.
That's called chartreuse.
Chartreuse.
Yes.
Now, the worst thing they could do with the chartreuse pants, which they haven't done yet this year. So
that would be bad.
They've done it before.
That would be unwatchable.
They have done it before. That's the color rush from Nike. All right. We're kicking things off this segment. I want to talk a little bit about what we were discussing with Bill Riley, who just got on the just got off the phone with us. And you know, I think this game's going to happen. I feel so much better about this one. Last week felt like
this week's going to happen for sure.
Last week
Utah.
Felt like it was. Oh man, there's no way they're going to make this thing happen. Like that was the feeling was. I don't know how they're going to make this happen. I mean, it was a couple days before. They didn't have a bunch of positive tests during the week. In fact, they had none. But what they had was guys who were still, you know, quarantined from the week before. And then they got that one positive test that put them into that under the threshold number. And so it was I'll be honest, Scott. It was probably a little bit of a lifesaver if you're talking about wins and losses because –
It could have been really ugly.
It could have been really bad from what we're hearing on how things were going with Utah last week. And this week, it's changed quite a bit around. And so I think that you're going to see, unless something happens with USC, knock on, oh boy, we've only got for Mike in here. Well, you've got wood at your house, Scott. So maybe.
I'm not. They're playing this week.
Okay. Scott, even though he's the most superstitious of both of us, he just is. He says they're going to play. He says it's going to happen. The Pac-12 is going to start allowing these non-conference games. As Bill said, the setup is. If one game gets canceled,
this is the perfect deal, Alex. Just so you know,
why is it the perfect deal?
So BYU can play Utah this year.
See, I'm not even going to entertain this at all. There's
Are you kidding me? This is the best case scenario.
Okay, and, so let me tell you how it's
not. This is the year that BYU can win, Alex.
Now that I agree with, and so to that end, I want to know. I'm acting like you about this game being played this weekend. I think that BYU would absolutely get the Utes this week. I mean, you think about how many times have we had this discussion about how bad it's been for Utah not being able to play because just by the sheer fact of these guys are so desperate to play, they haven't played yet, and getting a game in, trying to get these guys to get a game in is so important because starting the season is such a big deal. Now, BYU's got open dates next week on the 28th and the 5th of December. Other than that, I think that everything else is kind of off the table because it's going to be that quote-unquote championship week for the Pac-12 on the 19th. Although, if there are cancellations that week, maybe they allow for that non-conference game to happen on the 19th. So there could be some possibilities of openings there. Now you have to put this in there. It has to be that somebody who's playing Utah, it has to be that Utah is above the threshold of available players, and there's going to be some rigorous testing. Now, I don't doubt BYU could absolutely do that testing. But to ask that Utah has a game canceled against them because of the other opponent and another team in the Pac-12 is not going to be available to be playing that weekend, and That's not even bringing into account that the University of Utah would even want to play this game. I don't think that Utah wants to play this game.
I don't want to hear this ifs, ands, there,
it's
or
a bunch,
buts. Thing,
that's what. Okay? That's all we're working with in 2020,
no,
Scott.
I don't want to hear that. Okay, that's that's just not optimistic.
Oh, are you saying I'm so poo-poo? Is that what you're throwing at me?
Yeah, put you on the list. Be careful.
All right.
You'll end up on our show.
All right.
Now here, this is a realistic scenario. It really is. I'm not. This is. I'm being serious right now. It's Oregon State. Utah plays Oregon State, and you look at a lot of the schools. They've kind of gone through this, right? They've had issues, but there hasn't been a school in Oregon yet. And like they're not going to have an issue. Utah plays Arizona State next week. Arizona State's gone through it. They're going through it. They're not going to have issues. Utah isn't going to have issues now.
Right.
It's run its course, right? So now Oregon State, and I'm telling you that could be a real game. Colorado could be a real game, and so
you're saying a game that could be canceled.
Yes.
So you're banking it on the Beavers.
But here's why. Yeah, because
nothing's
happened there.
Because they haven't had the issue yet. Okay.
But it could happen late and you could still have a game with BYU because it's close. Logistics are hard here. I mean I understand all of your ands, but you know, and this has to happen and that has to happen.
Yeah.
But with BYU being in such close proximity, they could bus up the day of the game and still be fine. So you could do it almost as last minute as you could possibly get it and still have a game. I know a lot of people are like, oh, no, don't mess up your season. Don't take the chance. Don't take the risk. You know, why would Utah want to play? Why would BYU? I've heard all the chatter on all the social media here.
But would Utah want that game?
Well, at that point, they've only played two games.
Yeah.
They're only going to play
four. If it was next week, it would have only been one. It would only be one.
Yeah, so yes, it's like – absolutely, they want to play more games. They don't care. The players, the coaches, they just want to play football. That's what they know. That's who they are. And not having the opportunity to play, they'll be happy to have any game, any possible game, and they'd want to play it. I really think – and I think that's the case for BYU. And I think it – look, you saw what happened to them already by not playing. They're eight, and they didn't – they just stayed there, right? And people kind of start forgetting, and they're gonna have this game against North Alabama, and it's not gonna move the needle a lot. And then they're gonna have another 2 weeks before their next game, and that's not gonna, you know, that next 2 weeks, unless they can, you know, be relevant. And look, the national pundits want to talk about BYU. I see BYU on all, you know, on all the sports websites, and they're being talked about right now, and they need to do something to stay in the conversation. Or they're going to fade. They really are. And what's going to happen is it's going to be Cincinnati is that Cinderella, that group of five team this year, and BYU is going to be kind of an afterthought. But if BYU can schedule another game and keep that relevance going and win 11 games in a season or possibly more, then that's a huge, huge win. But right now there's still questions about whether – BYU is that team that deserves to be a New Year Six or even a playoff team. But there's a real possibility if they can find another game to do it, and there's a real possibility they could play Utah. I really believe that. I'm not just saying this or being funny about it.
I think it's such a low probability. I think it's such a low possibility of it happening. And I think at some point they go, hey, look, we've got so many things that we've had gone wrong, you know, in terms of and if BYU does all the testing, I don't know how much of BYU's team has had COVID-19 or has not had COVID-19. What we do know is that they missed that Army game and there were problems in there. And I think that along the way, obviously, I think like a lot of programs who were working out this summer, some of them got it and kind of got it out of the way, according to them, during the summer. And
well, BYU's had all season long. I guarantee you they've had issues. I guarantee you they've had significant issues, but they've been able to, like, have weeks off. I mean, like the last couple of weeks. Who knows how many cases they've had in the last couple of weeks? But they've had the time to work through it without the pressure of actually playing a game. So I'm sure they've had issues.
I'm hoping that a game gets added with a good opponent. You know, like, that's what I'm hoping for. I don't want... another North Alabama. I'm already not really wanting North Alabama this weekend. But hey, I'll be there at Lavelle Edwards Stadium, so we'll see how this thing goes on Saturday. I'm interested to see. It's always tough when you never talk about the opponent because you don't know anything about them. And then the other thing is you don't think you know anybody else who knows anything about them. So we'll see how this thing shakes out. We're going to find out more about North Alabama. If anybody knows anything about them, Mitch Harper, our BYU insider, who will join us next hour. Joining us next, though, is Ben Anderson. Now that we have had about 24 hours to digest the draft for the Jazz, we'll see what his thoughts were on their picks last night. Stay with us. And moves today. Stay with us right here on KSL's Unrivaled.
KSL's Unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, welcome back, everybody. KSL's Unrivaled, Alex Keery, Scott Mitchell. If you were like us, you were watching the draft last night. It was, it was about an hour from, we're 23 hours away from that first, when that first pick happened, because we were sitting there going, when are they going to, I mean, my heavens, they're taking so long to get there, and then finally they got there. And the Utah Jazz, as we start to look at it, of course, there always has to be an unpronounceable name from the very beginning. And the very when Udoka Azubuike was announced by Adam Silver, the commissioner of the league, I think we all looked at each other and went, one, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. Two, I didn't see him on any of the best players available boards. Joining us right now on KSL's Unrivaled, he is our Jazz insider for KSLSports.com. Ben, what was your odds-on favorite that Udoka Azubuike was going to be the guy chosen by the Jazz in that 27th spot?
Yeah, I certainly didn't see that coming for the Jazz. But you know what? Maybe we should have seen something like that happening, because they were so comfortable trading back from 23 down to 28 or 27. They clearly knew the guy they were going to draft was going to fall that far, because nobody else wanted him at that range. So either the Jazz thought they were smarter than everybody else in the room, or they were comfortable overdrafting.
Yeah, tell me about him. I mean, what does it mean to draft him? Does it mean that he's a guy that could replace Rudy Gobert, or is he a guy that is going to be that backup when Rudy goes out of the game? What was the purpose, and how does this guy help the Jazz?
I think 95% of the idea was to have a player who, having played 4 years at Kansas, he's got an NBA body already. He needs to get in better shape, but everybody does coming out of college. He should be able to step on the floor and play right away. So in that sense, you drafted a guy that fills a bit of an immediate need. You weren't very good at backup center this last year because Ed Davis was a bust and Tony Bradley never developed, and that's why he got traded to Detroit. So you brought in a guy to fix one of your issues that you had this last season. But I do think, and it's a bit unspoken, that there's a hope or a chance and a willingness that if he does develop into this guy who blocks a lot of shots, catches lobs, runs up and down the floor, and can do, I don't know, what percentage of Rudy Gobert does he need to do for the Jazz to feel comfortable moving on from Rudy and not paying him $150 million a year when you have a guy with a similar skill set who makes $2 million a year? It's not that the Jazz goal was from drafting him.
And,
but
well,
if it happened,
it'd be a benefit. Yeah, and that's
there's an upside to it if it happens.
That here's the thing too. We've spent so many of these last few years like babysitting Rudy's feelings. Like, are you doing okay? Like, he has to be checked on all the time to see if he's like mad about something, if something offended him, if somebody said something that slighted him, if there was a, you know, I feel like that there's always been some way that we've had to kind of see how Rudy's feeling. And you know, he has a propensity for being slighted. Is it the kind of thing where he would have seen that last night as that type of a move? Or is he comfortable enough knowing he's Rudy Gobert, he's the guy who needs to be replaced? Not he's going to be replaced, but that you have to show up and show something really amazing if you're going to replace the Stifle Tower.
Yeah, I don't think Rudy feels the threat of it. He may feel slighted, like, what, you're not happy with my work? You're not, you know, I'm not giving you exactly what Azubuike does and do it, you know, 10 times better at this point in my career. I'm sure Rudy notes that. He's petty. He's certainly going to recognize that might be a tiny, tiny shot over the bow. But otherwise, I can't imagine Rudy's going to react poorly. And also, you know, Rudy likes other big guys. Rudy's going to be nice to him. I think Rudy's actually probably going to show him the ropes. I don't think Rudy's terribly worried about losing his job at this point.
So other draft picks, the second round pick, what does that mean to the Jazz? Is that a good pick? Is that a bad pick?
Elijah Hughes is interesting in the sense that I think it's a good pick. And actually, if you kind of look at everybody else who does it, John Hollinger, who used to be a general manager with the Memphis Grizzlies, who now works for the Athletic, and discussed some of the draft picks and his grades. He really liked it. He thought Elijah Hughes was a first-round worthy player. The Jazz got him at 39. Just by a value sense, that's good. We talked about this on, what's today, Thursday? We talked about this on Tuesday,
yeah.
How some people's boards would have a guy at 20 that's available at 40. And maybe that could very realistically be what the Jazz did with Elijah Hughes and getting a guy that a lot of other people projected very highly. So in that sense, I think there's good value there. He does feel a little bit more of a need. Syracuse is weird. Guys who get, they don't play man-to-man defense. They only play zone defense at Syracuse. So you can't tell whether or not those guys are good defenders when they get to the NBA. So it's a little bit of a gamble there. He was asked to do a lot at Syracuse. Like, he was asked to dribble a lot and create his own shot and pull up off the dribble and hit mid-range jump shots and shoot over people. And the Jazz don't need him to do that because the Jazz generate open shots, and they've got Donovan Mitchell who can do that, and they've got Bojan Bogdanovic and Mike Conley who can do that. He just needs to hit open threes when he gets the chance. And from what you've seen in college, he can do that when he gets those looks.
Ben Anderson joins us here on KSL Zone Rivalry. He's our Jazz insider. You can see his byline, of course, at KSLSports.com. And Ben, one of the things, too, that I was interested in knowing about were some of these other moves and how important they were for kind of the money moving forward for the Jazz. You see, of course, Tony Bradley being moved, and then Ed Davis also being moved today. And so what are the other moves that were made today for the Jazz? What are the purpose of them, and what are we going to end up seeing because of those moves?
Okay, so before the Jazz traded Tony Bradley and Ed Davis today, they had about $8 million more dollars on their books. So they were sitting at about $113 million in cap space, or of salary cap money. Now, the luxury tax is $132 million. You can go above that number, but you can only go up to about $138 million, depending on what types of exceptions you use to sign players. Before I get too dorky here, it just means if you're over the cap, what type of money you
right,
can actually
sure.
spend. So if the Jazz, you can get one of those exceptions is worth about $10 million, just to give you a square number. That's the mid-level exception. That's also about what Jordan Clarkson's going to cost. So the Jazz could have signed Jordan Clarkson for $10 million and then had the other $10 million on that exception to come back, but they would have been at $120 million or $130 million at that point. And if they were there, they're already at the luxury tax, and then they have to fill out the rest of their roster.
Right.
So that becomes tricky. What they've done essentially is given themselves another $8 million in room to operate, to sign those guys. By doing that, it actually opens up another smaller exception they can use for about $3.5 million. And because they can do that, they can get a better player.
Real quickly, what's your overall grade for the Jazz on their draft day and their moves over the last day?
C minus on Azubuike and maybe a B plus on Elijah Hughes. So, and the trade was smart. You had to get rid of some money. So overall, I'll give him a B minus.
Okay. Hey, that's like my college in a nutshell. I feel okay about that. That's everything's okay right there in that B range.
Hey,
all right.
Passing grade gets you a degree.
B's get degrees. Ben Anderson, you can read his byline at KSLSports.com. Go do that. Get yourself smarter on those Jazz topics. We appreciate Ben joining us. We're going to take the break here. We'll come back. Got a score update, too, going into halftime with this Seahawks-Cardinals game. Stay with us here on KSL's Unravel on KSL News Radio.
According to Alex, most valuable player.
Okay, welcome back to the show. This is KSL's Unrivaled. I'm Scott Mitchell. He's Alex Keery. And you know this Udoka Azubuike. Here's what makes me nervous about this guy. This makes me nervous.
Okay.
Is just kind of reading some of the stuff about him and what you know, and his kind of thoughts and his assessment. I get really nervous when a guy goes, yeah, I've really been working on my game. I'm really trying to get better at my game. And I've just been working on every aspect of my game. And it's like it makes it sound like he's not good at anything. Like, and I know he's a good player, but it's that confidence thing. It feels like he's not really 100% confident in his abilities. Now I know, you know, he's one of these guys who's had limited experience with basketball, and he's a raw, more of a raw talent. Of course, he played at Kansas, and you can't be bad and play at Kansas, but It just makes me nervous a little bit when.
Well, I did. There was a to bring to kind of add to those kind of nervous feelings. There are a lot of people that were like, "Hey, I know he's got the all-time record on field goal percentage." They're like, "He just does not miss shots."
Right.
And then they just keep showing shot after shot of this 7-footer dunking. And then somebody was like, somebody responded was like, "Can we pretend like are we just going to pretend like you know, all night that that this guy's he's not an amazing shooter. He dunks over really small guys in college." And I was like, "That's true." But we do the same thing with Rudy. We're like, "Amazing. What amazing field goal percentage Rudy Gobert has." You know, and you go,
"But he's 7 feet tall."
I mean, and he's a big dude,
you don't
too.
You have to jump to dunk a That's ball true. When you're 7 feet
he's
tall.
He's a big dude, too. So there's he's a big body. And, you know, that's what we love about Tony Bradley but Derek Favors was he was such an athletic and strong big man that when he would go in the game, you felt like, hey, yeah, he might not be 7 feet, but he's pushing dudes around and you knew he would fight for a rebound that most guys wouldn't get. And so I think you can develop Azubuki into that, you know, and the draft is it's a crapshoot, man. It's just so weird. You know, for Ben to say, yeah, C- on the Azubuki, you know, draft, what did they see in him that other teams had no interest in? You know what I mean? Like, what do the Jazz see that other talent scouts didn't see? You know, and at that point you just go, okay, I'm gonna let Dennis Lindsay take the wheel here because I've got to trust you. I don't have the same type
You've
of
watched
Moneyball,
right?
Yes, I have. You're not trying to replace Rudy Gobert. You're just trying to have some skills filled in there.
But I love the discussion between these scouts who've been doing this
for these
eons.
Old guys, yeah.
And then they come in and they're like, you know, saying all these players who are terrible, and it's like, we're looking for run production. We're not looking for, you know, replacing Jeremy Giambi.
Yeah. Okay. 38 so, we can't look, we need he's like, "Hey man, we need to replace 38 home runs and 120 RBI." He goes, "Yeah, but if you're going to try to find another Giambi, it's not going to happen." I just love that scene because they're all spitting tobacco.
It's just a great scene.
It feels like they got real scouts, like a bunch of just codgery, grumpy, like don't tell me how to do things kind of. So
great scene.
I love that because, you know, that's essentially what all these quote-unquote war rooms are, right? Draft day, you know, when they're working these guys out. And there's guys watching them, and there's a couple guys that are behind some mirrored glass up at one level.
You know how the Cincinnati Bengals did it when I was there?
How'd they do it?
They didn't have a scouting department. So the coaches had to go out and scout the players.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, they had no scouting department. So there's a service that all these teams, that it's called Bledsoe, and it's a thing that
– How did they not scout? You mean they would only scout in the off season?
They're too cheap to put together a scouting department.
Okay. So on a normal non-year, if you've never done this before, if you never have seen these guys before, these scouts, if you go any given year in these press boxes, go to the University of Utah, go to BYU, there are set aside press box seats for, I would say, between 4 and on a really good year, 7 pro scouts who are there watching a handful of these guys.
Yeah,
sometimes it's 2 or 3 guys.
And they have regional scouts. They have guys they trust, and they say, "Hey, give us names." And I run into guys.
So you're saying
all
the Bengals had none of those guys showing up?
No, because you got to pay money for that. They had no one. So they relied on this information that was basically put together by all of the NFL teams, and it basically graded and said, "Here are the top players." So they went off of that information. Or what everyone else was saying, and the coach would go out and look at a guy and go, "Yeah, he passes the test. He's fine." And they had no one going out and actually
really
scouting
knowing.
And doing this.
Yeah.
So it was a total shot in the dark. And the Bengals, I don't know if it's changed. It may have changed a little bit, but
it had to have.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wild if it hasn't. All right, let's get to our MVPs. Scott, you've got kind of a. You've got kind of a lengthy one, so I'm going to let you kind of. I've got some sound to play, and or maybe you can set it up for us, because then you can just
so
tell
my
me
MVP is Urban Meyer, and it's his conversation about some of these big time programs who are struggling. Penn State's 0-4. Michigan has won one game. Nebraska, LSU, who won a national championship, kind of fallen off the edge. Yeah. And he gives an explanation as to why that is. And it was, when I first read it, I'm like, this is the lamest article I've ever read, and this is the lamest thing I've ever heard. And then I heard Urban Meyer explain why this is the wrong kind of thinking, and why it's not the players, it's not the program, but it's actually something else.
So many of us are excuse makers. I mean, that's part of who we are, and it shouldn't be that way. When you see a team struggle, the first thing the fans and the media blame are the players, or they blame the coaches. It's never more evident than the NFL. I always laugh every week when I'll hear someone say, well, they got bad players in the NFL, some team that always struggles. I'm thinking, wait a minute. Think about what you just said. There's not a bad player in the NFL. They're NFL players. Same with the coach. You can't say, well, he's a bad coach. Now, maybe they're not coaching well, or maybe the player's not playing well, but that's where I always say, lift under the hood. Never make excuse. When I was a coach, I would never let one of my coaches say he's a bad player. I'd warn them, say that again, you probably have to leave, because that's just, you're making excuses. Now, dig deep and find out why.
That really spoke to you, Scott.
So it did, because
we listened to it, and then I go, right, and I said, I kind of believe, I'm kind of like feeling the coaching spirit here with Coach Meyer.
100%, because I'll tell you that when we were speaking of Cincinnati, best talent I was around was when I was in Cincinnati. We had really good players, and it's really true. You don't have bad players in the NFL. No one is bad. No one at any position, but the organization, the mindset, and that's what he talked about. He said there really are three things. It's either there's no trust between ownership, players, coaches, players, or players and players. And when you don't have trust, it kills everything. And then there's a dysfunction to all of this. And then there was a third thing. I can't remember what it was, but it was actually really important.
It's like this. See number one. If you have to go back to number three, no, it was dysfunction. It was trust, and then it was something about Tell me about the relationship with your mother, that kind of thing.
Well, but the whole point of it is, and I've lived it, and I've seen it, and I've seen great culture, and looking under the hood and seeing that it's not about a coach, it's not about talent, it's about the structure of the organization, and it always boils down to those three things. And you look at that in sports, but man, you can relate that to relationships. You can relate it to business, to everything. I mean, you can relate it to our show. This is the most dysfunctional show on the radio. And maybe sometimes. But
there's trust issues. There's all sorts of problems.
But I loved his response.
Yeah.
And everyone wants to point the finger. And really, you need to say, no, we need to look in ourselves and look and see if we're actually the problem with this.
I'll do my MVP quick, since we got to be out quick. Russell Wilson, first half, they're leading 16-7 over the Cardinals. Homer. Listen, he's 15 for 17 with two touchdowns in the first half.
You're the biggest homer.
No problem. No problem.
How do you sleep at night?
Taking a break. News, traffic, and weather. We'll come back. I'm going to throw down some more love for my Seahawks next. Stay right here. Mitch Harper's also going to join us.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Keery on KSL News Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back. KSL's unrivaled, back underway. Seahawks up 16-7 as the third quarter starts up between the Cardinals and the Seahawks. This is a big one, Scott. I know you tried to poo-poo my point earlier.
No, it's a great game.
Seahawks, 6-3 Cardinals, 6-3 Rams. So you've got you got to make your move if you're the Seahawks. Get a full game on the Cardinals and then go into a 10-day break. You know how it was playing on Thursdays. You go in there, if you could get a win on a Thursday and then go into that 10-day break.
Thursday at this time of year is what's great is that extra time of rest is huge to just push through those last four or five games of the season. It was a massive advantage for us.
Well, I just
and people caught on to it actually, and they complained about it after some time.
Well, and part of the thing is that now everybody plays. I mean, it used to just be that four teams would play on Thanksgiving, and
two of them played at home.
It was always the Cowboys.
Every single Thanksgiving, yes.
Always the Lions. So you had I could always count on. And then there was that. Was it a Thanksgiving? No. I'm trying to think when you won in overtime. Was it an overtime win? No, it wasn't overtime. But you beat
against the Dallas Cowboys.
Yes,
oh,
down there.
It was a Monday night game.
It was a Monday night game.
Yeah.
That's right. When you guys were wearing your old school Detroit gear.
Old school, yeah.
I love those jerseys. And Barry Sanders had a decent game. He and Emmitt Smith.
Emmitt Smith battled.
But you had like a ton of yards too that you threw for, and a few touchdowns in that game too.
Yeah, but all they cared about was Barry. Right?
Yeah, it was Barry and Emmitt Smith, two greatest running backs of that era.
Yeah. They didn't care about the throws that got us in. None of that mattered.
Well, yeah. Well, interesting. Hey, I want to start things off here. It's the 8:05 cut, which means we're going to jump into something with this one. It's going to be BYU related. Our guy, Mitch Harper, is going to join us. Here we go.
The cut at 8:05. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
All right. Mitch Harper, host of Cougar Sports Saturday. Host of things. Cougar Tracks. You can also download the Cougar Tracks podcast and listen there. Listen to Cougar Sports Saturday as well. There's not going to be Cougar Sports Saturday this week because the Cougs are going to be playing a midday Saturday game. 1 o'clock kickoff. You're going to get the pregame right here on KSL at 11 a.m. And Mitch, we brought you on for one sole purpose. I have no idea who this North Alabama team is. Is it North or Northern? I've been saying North all week. Is it North Alabama?
Yeah, North Alabama. It was funny. I saw like one of BYU's official like social media accounts tweet out Northern Alabama, and I had the same thought, and I was like, have I been
saying this wrong
the entire time?
No, I saw.
It's North Alabama, the Fighting Lions from Florence, Alabama.
I saw this breakdown this week about why BYU wouldn't go to the college football playoff by, I think it was a new, it was like a publication you never get your sports from. It was like the New York Post. And they were like, this cupcake of a game against South Alabama this week. And I went, they don't even know who they're playing. And then at the same time, I was like, but I don't blame them because it doesn't really matter. No one's going to care which directional Alabama it is. They just know it's not the Alabama. And what does BYU have to do this week? What on earth are they looking at with North Alabama coming into Provo?
I think the most interesting things to watch for in this game, guys, is simply how long does Zach Wilson play and how long do they keep him in to pad the stats? I mean, that's, to me, kind of the most interesting thing because they kept him in kind of later than expected against Boise State, and he was taking some unnecessary hits, I thought, against the Broncos in that game. That was a 51-17 blowout. So I think that's something that I'm going to be kind of watching for because this team and some of the players, not the coaches, but the players, they put it out there that they know style points are a thing and they want to probably, you know, put a complete beat down and not make this thing any closer than it needs to be. It's not going to be close, but I mean the line is like 47.5. I mean, can BYU cover that? I think that's going to be something that's going to be kind of interesting to follow in this game.
All right. I'm going to go a different way because I respect all of my opponents and I respect them like, you know, times 10. Okay. Who is this opponent? Tell me about him. Why? What is good about him? What is bad about him? I want to know who they are.
Now you're putting Mitch on the spot. I mean, my heavens.
He knows.
Well, they're 0-3.
They're from Alabama.
They're from Alabama, Florence, Alabama. They're actually one of the few FCS teams that decided to play in the fall, because most FCS teams like Weber State, Southern Utah, they're going to all play in the spring, and
right. You
know North Alabama is going to do that with their conference.
And
but
we know how spring leagues work, right? Mm-hmm. They don't work.
That's right. They don't.
They're going to go out of business.
And another thing is that they were the only team that actually stayed true to BYU's schedule through the thick and thin. Like this has been a game that's been on the schedule for 4 years now, and they did not waver at all. But honestly, they got an okay quarterback. He was once a three-star prospect originally at Southern Miss, and he went to the JUCO scene. Blake Devers, he's decent. They stretch the field quite a bit. They'll go downfield. They feel pretty confident they can make some big plays happen through the air. But honestly, I mean, I think that this is a game where BYU could, you know, put up, you know, 60 points maybe, and that's might need be what they need to do to to turn any sort of heads or maybe make a case to move up at all in the polls. But, you know, Tuesday is going to be the college football playoff polls, and you don't want to give any sort of doubt potentially to that playoff committee, because it's critical for this BYU team to be at least in the top 12 to be in that at-large pool for a New Year's Six game.
Do they end up in that first set of votes in that college football playoff ranking, in that, I wouldn't even just say top 12. Do you think they can crack the top 10?
Man, I feel like it's going to be in that range. 10 to 12 is somewhere in there. I mean, I would be surprised if they're in single digits, say 8 or 9, like we're seeing in the AP coaches poll. I would be surprised, because I think the committee is going to favor a Wisconsin over a BYU. I think they're going to favor teams like that, maybe even Miami, over BYU. Ugh. Whereas the pollsters, they've seemed to really embrace BYU. I'm curious to see how the playoff committee views this BYU program, because, man, you think about it this way. If they, you know, put BYU at 7 or 8, I think it would be a glowing endorsement, one, of this team, how they view them, and two, I think of independence, because we've always seen with group of five teams that are not in the Power Five, they always start low, like 15 or lower on the initial playoff rankings. If BYU's in that top 10, I think that would be a real statement and an endorsement of how the committee views an independent, not a group of five, but an independent BYU. That'd be interesting. But I would bank on 10 to 12 range for the Cougars on Tuesday night.
Pac-12 has opened up the purse and allowed teams to play non-conference. Does BYU just troll the Pac-12 now and just look for possible games, or how do you think they view playing a potential Pac-12 opponent?
Yeah, I think they would be open to it for sure. I think if it was the right situation, say an Oregon or a USC, that would definitely solidify their place as a at-large New Year's Six team. Because that's the thing, is that the committee will have to place BYU in the Peach Bowl or the Cotton or the Fiesta, whatever game it might be. They're going to have to place BYU in. There's no guarantees for the Cougars. So I think that's one of the fears I think BYU has, is that it seems like on paper everything is set for the Cougars to go to the New Year's Six, but we know that, you know, committees, when it comes to voting BYU, they never get really the benefit of the doubt. They're never going to get a great seed. They're never going to get a great ranking. So there's a little bit of that concern, especially with the poor strength of schedule. So I think that opportunity, maybe if it poses itself to play in Oregon, a USC, or even a Utah, if we want to get crazy here, that would be enticing. I think BYU would have to entertain.
Mitch Harper, he's going to be at the game on Saturday. Mitch, we'll be right by each other there up in the old press box. And the game's awesome. Going to be in the afternoon. It's going to be a lot of fun. So KSLsports.com is where you can find Mitch's byline, KSL News Radio, also on Cougar Sports Saturdays. And, boy, we've got all the angles covered this Saturday. Appreciate you, Mitch, and we'll talk to you again. We'll take the break here. More to go right here in KSL's Unrivaled. We'll come back. Sam Farnsworth from KSL 5 Television is going to join us. We're going to chop up some of the Jazz stuff, the BYU, the Utah stuff, everything. Plus, man, the Cardinals are getting closer, knocking on the door, scoring on the Seahawks. Stay with us.
All right, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. Scott Mitchell, Alex Keery. You know, the state football championships are tomorrow, I believe, and they may even be over the weekend. Growing up, one of the biggest thrills of my life was actually playing in a state championship at Rice-Eccles Stadium. And it was like the destination. And I also coached in a state championship as a coach and coaching high school football and being there. And it's just a great place to be able to have that moment. And I'm really glad that these kids are actually getting to play in state championships in football. But they're not going to get that opportunity to play at Rice-Eccles. And that kind of makes me a little sad.
Yeah, and you guys at TV, on the TV side, cover so much of the prep side of things too, Sam, as we get into this. So they're playing at Cedar Valley High School, the big games, right, 5A and 6A. So tell us who's playing in these championship games and what we should expect. Let's start with the 6A game. I know it's Corner Canyon taking on Lone Peak. That's one that everybody's been waiting for, of course, all year long. They were anticipating this was going to be the end of the year state championship, and that's what we're getting.
Yeah, there we are. You know, Corner Canyon's been downright dominant, right? And they have been for years, and it hasn't changed this year. Lone Peak played him decently earlier in the season, but in the end, Corner Canyon still one-handedly. The best game this year, that the best opponent, I don't want to say the best opponent, but the toughest game that Corner Canyon faced all year was against Sky Ridge, one that came down to the final play. Sky Ridge sophomore quarterback McKay Hillstead ran for the end zone, came up about a yard and a half short.
Yeah, he's a kid from Springville. Should be at Springville.
We have that at fill in the blank. We have that like so and so's from this city playing for this team. Yeah, it happens across
he's
the state.
He's good. He's really good.
Is he kind of the next Jackson Dart? He's going to get passing.
Yeah, I think the next 2 years you're just going to hear McKay Hillstead, McKay Hillstead, McKay Hillstead all the time. I'm just saying he is a solid quarterback. So. But they're out. You know, they lost to Lone Peak. Lone Peak's defense has been outstanding. The problem is you can only slow down Corner Canyon so much. You really have to find something to keep pace with that amazing offense that the Chargers have. And I just don't know that Lone Peak has that. You know, they've had a little more success since they went full-time with Jonah Hamuli at quarterback. But still, Corner Canyon, Jackson Dart, Noah Kerr, Talmadge Handley, the list goes on and on and on. They just have so many talented players on that football team. It's just, it's theirs to win, or I should say theirs to lose. And you know, kind of reversing a little bit, going back to what you're saying, Scott, about playing at Rice-Eccles. I mean, yeah, I agree. You know,
it's a bummer.
Yeah, in Colorado, they get to play at, you know, Mile High Sports Authority Field, or whatever they call it now. I was curious, and I'm not trying to derail this conversation, but Scott, I was curious. You said you got to play there at Rice-Eccles in the state championship. Had you already made up your mind? Were you already going to the U?
No, it was that was in the fall, but it was.
So did that play any role?
Not a single bit. Okay. No, but we wore necklaces with artificial turf on them for a year.
That's cool.
Because we'd been the number one ranked team like 2 years in a row. And we'd lost early in the playoffs, and we just said our senior year, not going to have this happen, and we are going to go to Rice-Eccles Stadium and win a state championship.
Pick up a penny, and you play all day. We've been playing that way too much this week. I apologize.
And Steph, you've loved every minute of
it. I have. Listen, anytime we can bring it back, I love it. So let's talk a little bit about – we've got a couple things we got to bring up. First, Ben Anderson, we had him on earlier tonight.
Yeah.
He graded the Udoka Azubuike pick as a C-.
Yeah.
Is that the way did you react like everybody else kind of did, where it went, "Oh, what? Who?"
My reaction wasn't a "what? Who?" It was more of a
"why? Why would they do that?"
It was more of a "wow. Okay. I did not see them going that direction." So, I was hoping I liked, you know, Bay out of Colorado, a defensive wing that could stretch the floor, but I liked him. In my heart of hearts, I was hoping for the center. But I was looking at that Jaden McDaniels kid out of Washington. I thought they would go that direction, a guy that was kind of the two-way player that could play defensively as well. I think he's like with his arms reached up. He's like got that 8'11" reach.
Yeah.
I thought that was the direction they'd go. So Udoka Azubuike, did it surprise me? It did. Do I think it's a decent pick? I might grade it a little higher than Ben's C-. I might say maybe a B or B minus, because I still think that was a big position of need. They needed to have more depth behind Rudy Gobert. Ed Davis wasn't doing anything.
Right.
That was the signing last year that was supposed to help out right there, and it didn't do a thing. Tony Bradley couldn't get it done when he was coming off the bench. So now they've got a guy that I believe is going to be a decent defender at the rim. I mean, he's tall, he's big, he's got that ability. But I think he also can add a little bit offensively in the paint that, you know, when Rudy Gobert's out, Rudy Gobert, as much as people want to, I've seen people bag on him for his offensive, you know, he's not the guy that they have to lean on. No, that's true. But Rudy Gobert brings a lot to the Jazz offensively. He really does. And when he's off the floor, it changes the way they play the game. If you've got a backup that can come in and still kind of do the pick and roll, dunk at the rim, stuff like that Rudy does, which I believe Azubuike can do, then I don't think it changes what they do offensively as much when Rudy Gobert's out. So I'm optimistic about the pick, and maybe that's me wearing my blue and yellow and green goggles, but I don't forget
purple.
Yeah, purple, some purple goggles too. Yeah. I'm optimistic though. I thought it was a decent pick. I thought they filled the position of need. So
the Pac-12 has allowed the teams, if they have an opening, to play and schedule a non-conference opponent. Do you think there's any possibility that BYU could be an opponent for Utah?
None. I think there's no possibility. Would I love to see it? Yes. Oh, I think everyone in the state would love to see that matchup. They'd love to see it happen some way, somehow. I think they'd love to see BYU. BYU fans, I think, would love to see BYU add just about any Pac-12 opponent at this point. But once the Pac-12 came out and said, okay, you have to use our testing and abide by all of our COVID protocol, you have to play at our Pac-12 venues, and if you do schedule one of our teams and then suddenly another Pac-12 opponent is available on Thursday, then we're canceling with you and adding that Pac-12 team, right? So there's just so many hula hoops to jump through that it just seems like it's more of a chore than maybe worth getting them on the schedule. But I think if there's any way to get Utah on, yeah, you should explore it. You should think about it. You should consider it. But with the strict protocols that the Pac-12 has, I don't know that BYU would go that direction.
Well, and Scott, you don't like to hear this, but I really don't think Utah wants this game this year. I think they're just like, look,
I think you're right.
We've won nine in a row, and right now it's just not a good time to have BYU on the schedule.
This game wouldn't even be close.
Okay,
this isn't the year.
I know it wouldn't.
This is definitely
Scott,
not the year that we would want to lose the streak. Right?
Oh, come on.
He wants the streak intact, and this is not the year.
Yeah. No, I'd say play it.
I would like to.
Doesn't scare me at all.
So one thing that I've seen a lot of BYU fans saying on you know, some of them are for scheduling Pac-12. Others say no, don't do it. That could ruin this season. I'm like, look. If you're afraid to play Utah because you're afraid that their streak will continue and why do you deserve an NY6 or a playoff? You know what I mean? If you're afraid to play Utah, you got no chance playing another big opponent, big-time P5 opponent.
What's going on tonight on KSL5 television, 10 o'clock, Sports Beat? What do you guys have?
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Jazz, what they've done, the wheeling and dealing that they've done today to set themselves up for free agency. We talk about a BYU addition on the basketball team.
Yes.
And, of course, Thursday Night Football.
Another Wasatch Academy edition.
Right. The pipeline.
And the Seahawks just scored again. It's getting chippy in this game. What I like about this is it's getting chippy. That's good for a divisional matchup. So we'll see. We'll take a break here. Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, thanks,
appreciate
guys.
You hanging out, man. We'll come back. More to go right here. NFL Roundup and our 2-minute drill right around the corner.
Hey, welcome back to KSL's Unrivaled. I'm Scott Mitchell. He's Alex Carey. And you know what, Alex?
What's up?
I am calm.
You are. You sound calm.
I am calm. You want to know why I'm calm?
You found your center. Why?
I found my center. I don't know what that means. Chakra. Got all these chakras going on. Look, I am calm because I know.
Oh, boy.
I know that Utah and USC are going to play this week. I know it. I know it's going to happen.
It. Hey,
no.
Send your mean emails to Scott Mitchell after he jinxed the game for Saturday.
No.
Scott Mitchell.
I got confidence.
@ksl.com. That's the old email.
I'm staking my whole reputation on this based on nothing.
That's my new favorite thing
that Utah is going to win this week.
I have all the confidence in the world based on nothing that this is going to happen. All right. So, look, that's a good way to look at it. I am too. I'm hoping Utah plays. I'm hoping that they have a real game this weekend. I'm hoping that there are no interruptions the rest of the year for them. I'm not even wishing for like a BYU-Utah game that happens.
One.
You do?
I want one. Oh, yeah.
You do, really?
Yes.
You think this would be a good year for the Utes?
I'm so bored right now. You just need something.
want extra games.
Crazy out of the – yes. Mm. I don't care. Yeah. Love it.
Okay.
Bring
it on. What if it's
I don't care.
What if the Aggies are available?
I don't care.
If it's between the Aggies and BYU, you just want a game. Okay.
Do not care.
We're kicking off that last part of our show, of course, that we do every evening, and we do it with this music. And Scott explains what a 2-minute drill is for all of us who are listening. What is a 2-minute drill, Scott, and what do we do at the end of the show?
I'm so glad you asked. I'll explain.
Thank you.
End of football game, you got to hurry down the field, kick a field goal, score a touchdown, win a game. Don't have a lot of time, so you're in a hurry. You got to hurry, hurry. You don't even have a timeout sometimes. Well, on our show, same thing. We got a lot still to talk about, but not a lot of time, so we talk a little bit about a lot of things. We hurry down the field, win the show, get a trophy, because everyone gets a trophy today, and we go home happy, of course, wearing a mask.
Mm. Oh, there you go. Yeah, hey, mask up, everybody out there. Come on. Gordon Hayward has opted out of that $34 million contract. This is a player option. He's walking away from $34 million this year
Okay.
for the Boston Celtics. I have to believe that he knows he's not worth $34 million this next year at whatever the next team he's going to be going to. Now,
well, why would you leave? No one does this.
It has
you
to
just
be based
don't walk
on,
away. It's like they have to have some kind. There must be some kind
it's
of.
It's got
to like
be based on the same
blackmail,
thing.
Or he's done something just.
Who was your
horrendous?
MVP? Who was your MVP last hour? It was Urban Meyer, right?
Yes.
Initially, we laughed at this earlier in the day, but then when we heard it, I was like, "That kind of makes sense." And I'm not going to poo-poo the guy who has had success everywhere he's gone. So the idea was, if things aren't going well, it's not that Gordon Hayward's not a good basketball player. It's not that the Boston Celtics are a bad team. It's that there's been some sort of trust issues, and I'm not trying to sound all Freudian here, you know? Trust issues, you know, with his mom and dad, I don't know.
You have trust issues, Alex.
but there's also dysfunction of some sort. And I think that if you're walking away from $34 million because he's not going to make that other play, I don't know another team that might give up. I mean, it's just insane to think that he's walking away from $34 million. Obviously, the money doesn't matter to him because he's looking for a better mental state wherever he goes next. Because Boston is a competitor. Boston's a contender for a title. And he's getting paid $34 million, so there's obviously something in there. He's playing for the guy who he wanted to play with.
But,
right,
couldn't you just say, you know, for a year, I'll just find a way to suck it up. I don't know. Maybe they just told him, they said, look, no, under no circumstances are you really going to play. There's not an opportunity here for you. You're not in our future plans.
You'll make the $34 million, but you'll be doing it as the ninth man on the bench. No, but he was still scoring 18 points for him a game.
You just don't give up that money. It makes no sense.
It's dysfunction. It's dysfunction.
Something we do not know, and something significant that we do not know, has to be behind that.
If only he would write a super cheesy letter to the Players Tribune, so we would understand his feelings about what the move is that he's making. Now, in a maybe totally related move, the Knicks have freed up $40 million in cap space, and the rumors are that he could possibly be heading to play for the New York Knicks. Certainly, $40 million is not in his future. I think that most reports are saying $18 million is kind of more along the lines of what he might be worth.
You think he's going to the Knicks?
If he goes to the Knicks, talk about dysfunction. Goodness. He's like, I'm leaving Boston because it's dysfunctional. I'm going to New York. You're like, okay.
You know, there are some people out there that they just attract like bad relationships. You know, maybe that's what it is. Maybe Gordon Hayward he just likes bad relationships.
I used to listen to that Loveline show when I was a kid, right? And Dr. Drew would always say that. He would say, some people have bad pickers. They are destined to pick bad relationships. And they find themselves in them all the time. Again, Scott.
So Gordon Hayward's just a bad picker.
He's going back to the dysfunction. Going back to trust issues.
See, dysfunction is normal to him. He's just like, this feels good to me. I like what
this
is here.
There also may be some enlightened stuff going on here, because maybe he sees in the bank account, he's got, you know, $108 million sitting around in the old bank, and he goes, I don't need more money. What I need right now is some clarity. What I need is to feel happy. And I'm not finding that happiness
in
Boston.
Well, we had this discussion about James Harden. You know, he did the same thing. He just said, I want to go to a place that I'm comfortable and I feel – maybe that's what this new player is. I just want to feel comfort. I want to feel loved. I want to feel – I just don't like when things get, I don't know, hard and I have to compete. I want it to be happy all the time. Maybe that's what it means to be a millennial. I don't
know.
Scott,
what do you think the career earnings for Gordon Hayward have been over his career?
What do I think they are?
What do you think the career earnings for him have been over
his career? Well, it's over. I don't know. I think you want to tell me. That's what I feel.
And I looked it up. Yes, yes.
No,
yes.
And I feel kind of stupid right now because I don't know the answer.
No, you shouldn't feel dumb. No.
Well, you make me feel stupid.
No, I'm looking at career. It's like a game. It's a game. I'm saying just do this game.
$140 million.
Scott, why do you not put enough trust in yourself? $148 million in his career of earning.
Yeah, I was off about eight.
Now, in his first seven seasons
And
of
I didn't
the Jazz,
look that up, by the way.
You did look at it, or you did
no,
not?
No, I didn't. That was
no,
total
no, no,
guess.
No, you didn't. Okay, good. Yeah. He stood to make $34 million, which would have put his earnings at $182 million for his career. But right now, that sits with a big red line through it on this career earnings website.
Wow.
Yes, there's a career earnings website for NBA players. So there you go. All right,
and it has red lines too.
I hope he's happy. Look, that's what I'm saying. Two things.
That's very passive aggressive of you. I hope you're happy. Mm-hmm.
Here's what I'm going to say. I hope you're happy and don't come back to Utah. Like, don't act like you want to come back and play in Utah.
No. You don't want to do that.
Could you see him like maybe at the very end of his career? Because he's 31 next year. Do you see him like at 38 years old?
No.
Okay.
Look, there's an old saying, it's better to give birth than to resurrect the dead.
Mm.
Don't bring back old baggage and old things. Just look for new,
have a
fresh
new baby. Yeah.
Yeah. No baggage, no nothing.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. All right. Now, this one was interesting. This was one you brought up, and this is that and you've been in these negotiations before. And so to hear this story that Bobby Wagner was the one who worked out his last contract, this is the
best. He was his own agent.
He was his own agent. He was the best. He's the best middle linebacker in the last 10 years probably in the NFL. And this is the guy who has, obviously earned his keep at the Seahawks. And he went in, didn't have an agent, and said, I'm going to work out my own deal. I'm going to be my own agent. And he worked out his own deal. And I just assume that's not a good move. But you said it's if you're the right person for it,
well,
you can do a great job negotiating. Maybe it's because he's an all-pro guy. It doesn't matter. He can go in and negotiate whatever he wants.
How hard is it to negotiate if you're Bobby Wagner, right? I mean, you're a really good player, but you can also leave a lot of money on the table or a structure, you know, where they can back-end load a lot of things. The key to a good negotiated contract is how much money you're going to make that's guaranteed, and that's kind of a key. But what I like about this is so many players, when they're done playing football, they have no money. And to actually
they say that 80% of NFL players end up
take
broke.
Ownership of your life. This is a business. You're a multi-million-dollar a year business, and you need to see that as a business owner. And so, take responsibility, take ownership of who you are and what you are. And when you go in there and you start negotiating for yourself and you start seeing how people operate and think about you, all of a sudden you're like actually working for your money.
You know
and
what?
Realizing what goes into all of this. And I think there's a higher likelihood at the end of the day that you actually will keep more of it because you've invested in yourself and you've put in the time and you're actually actively out there participating in your future. Because so many of these athletes, they grow up and they just go, someone's always taking care of that for me. You know, I always had an academic advisor. They always walk me through everything. And you get in this mindset of letting someone else take control of all this. And that's where a lot of these players get into trouble. So I love that someone of his stature just said, no, I'm going to do this.
Well,
this
plus,
myself.
You know what you do? You cut out the 12% or whatever it is that you have to pay your
it's
agent.
It's just so three.
Oh, it's only three?
They're only allowed to take three.
Oh, well. I guess I got a bad deal on my agent. I'm gonna write that down real quick.
But DeAndre Hopkins, who's another great player, he did the same thing.
Same thing.
I
and
love
he can.
It.
They can. I love it. Yeah. Scott, it's a learned lesson from us today. Negotiate for yourself. You're your own business. Be your biggest advocate. Let's go. We're going to take the break here. We'll be back again tomorrow for another edition of Friday Edition, a weekend edition of KSL's Unrivaled. For Scott, I'm Alex. We'll see you then, everybody.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.